Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Hyundai. Best in new inventory with great warranties. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee, which means so much to the buying experience. Cap off your holiday season now. Get one. Always great deals and a fabulous service department to back it all up. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online, sunburymotors.com. There were a lot of great moments yesterday in sports. Unfortunately, it's another Sixers moment.
8 on the clock. Got to get into this set here. Harden outside right to the corner. Harris, three-point shot, bottom. Nailed it. Clutch Trey. Tobias, 5 threes in the game. Harden, 8 assists. Sixers by 3.
That was it.
Yeah, that was an OT last night against Toronto.
That's the best you could come up with? Really? I mean, the Hawks won by 1. You know, Lamar Stevens had a big night for the Cavs. Bucks won again. Suns got sold. Packers had a big night.
Nobody cares about that Monday night game last night. That was a slop fest. But I didn't see Lamar Stevens, so yeah, I'll give you that one.
I mean, you're 17-12.
Oh no, it's not been a great start. The Sixers are lucky that the Eagles are 13-1, or else they would be getting a whole heck of a lot more scrutiny. But they're starting to play better basketball. That was their fifth straight win last night.
It's amazing. It's amazing. The Eagles. Everybody I talk to, they are so enamored with this. I was talking to Dana O'Neill from The Athletic last Tuesday, and she lives in suburban Philly. They're wild over this team. Dick Girardi is watching every play.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, everybody. It's amazing how everybody is into it.
It went from Phillies fever now to this. I mean, it was neck and neck with the Phillies, but now it's just gone straight Eagles all the time.
I'm not so sure it's neck and neck. I think it's the Phillies, even when they were in the World Series, with a secondary story to the Eagles in some ways. It's amazing. It's a pro football town. They love it. I mean, they love both teams. But
the Eagles are always number one, no doubt. Yeah.
This kind of mania, if I can use that word, is reserved for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. All right, so let's bring in the pride of North Dakota State, who, by the way, they're back in the FCS title game, taking on South Dakota State. Neil Coolong, welcome, sir.
That is the positive news of the day. Heading back to Frisco, Texas, yet again, which is a streak I believe, Steve, started before I began coming on your show. That's how long that's been.
I barely even
remember the last time they didn't go. Well, the two times they didn't go, one year was COVID and they played in the spring, and that honestly shouldn't even count. There should be an asterisk by that. And the other one was the weird fluke game that they lost in Fargo, which just simply doesn't happen. It didn't happen again this year. So fortunately, they're heading back yet again. And it brings me back to the story of a buddy of mine from college said before the second one, I got to go to this. And he took out like a second mortgage to get the money to go down there. Cause he said, when am I going to get an opportunity to do this again? And it's a joke that we bring up every year. It's like, well, yeah, that was a decade ago. Marriages and kids born and everything since then. But back on top, hopefully once again. Arch rival South Dakota State is they're a good team. So this it might actually be done this time. Who knows?
Well,
who knows?
All I know is there are people that live up there that have timeshares in Frisco now because they get to use it once a year.
Probably a third of the way done. Hang it off, dude.
I mean, our team goes there all the time.
Run.
I don't need Chuck McDowell. I've got people that go, and we go there every year.
It's perfect. It works out. But, yeah, it's a large chunk of the economy in that town depends on North Dakota State traveling en masse down south for that game. And now they've got their brethren and Brookings, South Dakota, joining them.
Yes.
That'll be the place to be for a weekend. I think that's why they changed the game from Saturday to Sunday. I think they're trying to get another day out of the people that are escaping the frozen upper Midwest and heading down to the, I guess, you know, partially mild temperatures of Frisco, Texas.
Oh, exactly. I do have to ask you, because Sean Morris, who's on BTN, lives about 20 miles outside of Brookings, and he says South Dakota State's a beautiful school, great campus, the whole deal. Is there a depth of rivalry with them on the football level?
Here's what happened. This extends to when I was in school there. North Dakota State was a Division II school in the North Central Conference. The University of North Dakota, UND, was their primary rival. That was the big one. They played at that point. They had played it was like the third longest streak of games against one another in all of college football. It was like 105 years. That ended because NDSU elected to go Division I with their athletic department, and UND did not. South Dakota State did as well. So at that point, the kind of, I don't want to say manufactured rivalry, but it sort of became that because UND didn't follow along at that point, and a couple other NCC schools did. So it became more of, all right, well, UND doesn't want to come along, so you know, we'll make our rivalry against South Dakota State. Now, as it would turn out, they both kind of have gone through the lumps of the early process of that transition, and NDSU took off pretty much immediately with their football program, and it's been really good the entire time they've been Division I. They've never even been close to below 500 at that level. South Dakota State wasn't too far off from that either. They were also really good, and they became the national power that they are, except for the fact that they are still playing in the same conference with NDSU. They're the only team that's beaten NDSU, I think, more than three times in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. And they also have a high-level program. John Stengelmeyer is their coach. Oddly enough, he was their coach when they were Division II as well. So he's been there forever. He's a great guy, great coach. It's great to see him having the success that he's having. But it's a rivalry in a national sense because they're the powerhouses of whatever's left now of FCS.
Right.
And a big part of why FCS is kind of defunct is because of North Dakota State and to some degree South Dakota State, because they had the ability to put more money into their recruiting than other FCS schools did. Not the whole budget of the department, but a large chunk of it, for understandable reasons, goes into their football program. Other schools don't have the money to or they're not investing the money to keep up with that, so it's tougher for them. But that's why you're seeing FCS schools transitioning to FBS now.
Right.
You know, James Madison, another rival of NDSU's, just did that. They had some success this year out of the Sun Belt Conference. Others are doing that. Both NDSU and SDSU are discussing the possibility of doing that. Kind of seems like something inevitable because the FCS level, it might not make as much sense as it used to 20 mm-hmm. years ago when it made perfect sense. It's just the money is big enough now that they can probably afford more scholarships and try to compete at that level.
To the NFL we go. It was a weekend where the game between the Packers and the Rams at Lambeau ended up being 24-12, and that ended up being the largest margin of victory for the weekend. What does that tell us about the league at this time between performance and also attrition?
You know, I didn't hear that. That's a great stat. I didn't even think of that. But yeah, I could see it. I watched a lot of football this weekend, and I think like anybody, I've never seen anything like a couple of games. I mean, to see one of those games a season is something else. But on the same weekend, I mean, the Patriots game was laughable. I'm still laughing over that. The Vikings game was one of the most enjoyable football games I've ever seen.
True.
Just how crazy the whole thing was and how realistic it felt. But I think, and we've heard the stat, you know, the margin of victory is something like 6 points overall for the entire year, which is really, really thin if you think about it. Teams are not getting blown out unless they're the Steelers playing at Philadelphia or at Buffalo. Imagine you take those games out, it's probably like 2 points.
Right.
But I think there is a margin of parity that's at work. I'm not sure if it's a question more of uber elite, a lack of uber elite teams, or a glut of mediocrity, if that makes sense.
Right.
I put it like this. I think that the epicenter of this is in Philadelphia. If you watch Philadelphia, in my opinion, they're one of the most balanced, well-coached, well-prepared teams we've seen in the league recently.
No doubt.
They're a really good football team.
Yes, they
top
are.
Top to bottom. But they are not making splash plays constantly like the way we're used to. We're used to seeing Pat Mahomes back in the day, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, certainly. Mahomes is obviously doing pretty well. We're not seeing great things out of Rodgers, to put it mildly. Brady has entered the really old quarterback status that we expected him to get to at some point, just not, you know, 7 years too late. The offensive numbers, or the highlights, I should say, are not as eye-popping as they have been. And there's a general feel that offense is just slower. It's not working as much. To me, it looks more like defensive scheme has caught up with a lot of this, and they're just not allowing the big plays. Philadelphia, on the other hand, in comparison to their peers, it seems to me they're the ones that have anticipated this. And they're playing that level of defense, but they've also worked in a high-play, high-possession offense that's very difficult to stop. It doesn't need the big plays down the field, unless, of course, they're playing the Steelers.
Right.
They're methodical. They can run well. They can pass well. They do everything well. They can play left or right-handed, depending on what you do. And I think we're going to see come playoff time, they're going to chew everybody up, just because I don't think anybody can keep with everything that they're capable of doing.
Yeah.
They're the team that's built for this right now. But because they don't, like, they're not making 3, 4, 60-yard plays a game, everybody thinks that they're not an explosive team. It's just the defenses are taking a lot of that away. They're playing a lot of deep coverage, and Philadelphia is just like, okay, fine, we'll take everything that we need. And keep in mind, as of today, they're getting Dallas Goedert back.
They, you know, right, which is that's a huge pickup for them. I mean, just internally, it gives them another weapon. But see, I've had people say to me, Howie Roseman's the GM of the year. Well, he is. But what? Let's go. Let's take it a little bit deeper, right? You can sit there with your pom poms and go, "Oh, good, he's the GM of the year," but he has the flexibility nobody else has. I mean, he has his starting quarterback totally lucked out in his starting quarterback, right? Because you and I were like, "Okay, really?" Because he wasn't accurate in college. Now he's worked himself into being an outstanding NFL quarterback, but he's playing on second-round pick money, and the GM has all the financial opportunities in the world because his quarterback's on the second-round contract.
It's quite the weapon, isn't it? When you're able to get MVP-level production on pennies,
yes,
compared to the market.
Yep.
There are plenty of teams that can do that. You know, the salary cap is not the enemy the way people make it out to be. It's something I've always felt owners plant into the minds of the media in an effort to win the hearts and minds of the fans, because, oh, we're cash strapped. There's only so much we can do. It's sad that we have to let this veteran go. They can afford it. It's not a question of that. What Roseman has, though, is the ability to take that advantage and actually do something with it, because there are plenty of teams, and we'll see this at the end of the year. The Eagles, for example, they have that benefit, but they went out and acquired talent with it. The Chicago Bears could probably fund the nation of Cuba for a week with the amount of salary cap space that they have.
Right, exactly.
Because they haven't spent anything.
They have spent nothing.
So,
yep.
Yeah, and it's, you know, you're going to say, well, we're saving for this and we're going to do that. All right, fine. Eagles, they put everything together over the last two, maybe three seasons, you could argue, without a realistic sense that this is what they were going to turn into. Now, the biggest Howie Roseman fan there is. I think he's done an excellent job. He has a great vision for what he wants to be. I don't even believe 3 years ago he said this is what was going to happen. I mean, they've hit on everything. Everything has worked well for them. They got the sucker deal out of the Titans for whatever reason. The Titans don't want to spend money. Another market inefficiency. You have teams like that just make dumb decisions. The Eagles were there to exploit that in every opportunity that they could, and they've made hay with all of it. So yeah, they're the best. I don't see anybody beating them. You know, they've taken their most difficult competition to this point with the Dallas game, with probably without Hurts coming up. They've taken the best I think the league has given them, and they've dealt it right back and then some.
I mean, to me, the biggest threat to them are the 49ers. And because the 49ers defense is superior, it's better than the Eagles defense is. And the Eagles defense is really good, by the way, but the 49ers are better. The problem is they're going with I don't care what his stats are, they're going with the third string quarterback. And that's, again, that is a major disadvantage in a game like that, you know, that, let's face it, I mean, a lot of the tumblers have fallen into place for them.
Yeah, as far as San Francisco goes, I love the Brock Purdy story.
I think it's nice.
Great. Kyle Shanahan is an excellent coach. I understand that he hasn't won a Super Bowl and he's got some notable losses tagged to him, but he's probably the best offensive mind in the NFL. He's very well organized, very well liked by his players. His system can prop up a quarterback like that, but how many times has that stagecoach turned back into a pumpkin? How many times have we seen this?
Exactly.
Some more film is going to develop. Purdy is not going to last in the playoffs.
Oh, of course
and
not.
And it's terrible to say, because DeMeco Ryans, if he's not the first head coach hired, first man hired for a head coaching position in this cycle, there really is something wrong. The defense that San Francisco is playing, the scheme that they have, is so far ahead of everybody else. There's a reason that they literally do not allow points in the fourth quarter of games. And that's not normal. They don't give up points in the fourth quarter. Nobody scores on them, because by that point, they're so dialed in. They know everything you're doing, and they take everything you've got away from you. I was talking with some colleagues about this, and I wanted to write something on this. I feel the conference championship games most likely, this isn't a hot take by any stretch, Buffalo and Kansas City is going to be the marquee game. But for the real football people, it's Philadelphia and San Francisco.
Yeah.
That's just a phenomenal football game waiting to happen. Whatever the result, if those are the final four teams, I think it'll be a great Super Bowl. But we're going to get two epic conference championship games. And it's the combination of excellent coaches who have found market inefficiencies in building up what their teams are and what they're about. And the coaches are a big part of that. And I don't want to say younger is better or anything like that, but they have both identified a lot of very talented young minds in the game, and they're doing different things with the game that is changing away from a complete all-out aerial assault down the field to one of balance, to one of if not defensive domination, the way the 49ers are, not so much in their control. I mean, there's not many teams that are poised to make a Super Bowl run that are playing on their third quarterback in a year.
Right.
That doesn't happen very often.
No.
That speaks volumes to everything that they are as a team.
But what the 49ers can do, that if I'm the Eagles, worries me. What's the one game they lost? And I know there were turnovers in that game, but Washington controlled the ball. And that is part of the San Francisco formula, their ability to, quote, control the ball to go with that defense. And that's why one plays off the other. All right. So I assume you'll be around next Tuesday, right?
Of course you will. Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah. You're in.
Might be frozen, but I'll be
out. Oh, we all will be at that point. I mean, I'm not going to California until 3 days after that.
You're lucky.
Well, just to let you know, just to make up for it, the back end of the trip is in Michigan.
Oh, okay. Well, you're going to pay for that then.
Yeah,
oh,
dearly. and then I can lock you in for the next year on Tuesdays, right?
Absolutely.
Perfect. I'm loving it. One of my favorites for a wide variety of reasons. Sir, you're the best.
More than a pleasure for me.
Thank you to you and your family. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. You have earned all the good fortune that you have.
Well, thank you very much. It's definitely always my pleasure. You guys have a great holiday as well.
Neil Coulon joining us on the show today. Notice the, again, the rampant, rabid Eagle praise.
Oh, yeah. I always knew that Neil was a big Howie guy.
We've praised Howie left and right.
Oh,
there
yeah.
There are reasons. That, now, you have to make the right choices, right? And Howie's made the right choices. He's made good pickups that paid off. So you have to have the ability to do that. The difference is because there are guys that have flexibility, right? You're going to have a lot of flexibility and make the wrong choices. Howie has flexibility, and he makes good choices. Credit where credit's due. He deserves it. Because, again, you can have the flexibility and make bad choices. Howie's had flexibility. You know, he's not. He doesn't have his financial hands tied because of his quarterback. And he's made good choices. All right. Come back with more in a moment. We're going to talk about Letter of Intent Day next half hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. And a great service department that backs it all up. And Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. All right. Talk about Letter of Intent Day in a moment. Matt's been pacing all day. Because he's not sure about Jalen Hurts. Just want to make sure you're okay before we continue.
I'm good.
Yeah. I know you guys think Gardner Minshew is the second coming of Peyton Manning. I got that. A little bit sad. All right.
But to answer your question from before about the TV thing, to finish that answer, the only time I came close, and it really wasn't that even close, was the only time I've thrown something at the TV was when I was in fifth grade when they lost the 0-3 championship game to the Panthers. I threw a plastic soda bottle, empty soda bottle, at the TV when Deuce Staley dropped the touchdown pass. I think it was like late in the third quarter or whatever that went and got the Eagles back in the game. But that's it.
That's sad.
To which my mother was not pleased, and that was the end of that.
There's nothing like that moment.
Yeah.
Nothing like that moment. It was funny because the other day they played MLB Network had a look back at the Game 6 of the 75 World Series. And the Red Sox lost the series in 7. But in Game 6 is considered to be the greatest World Series game, singular game ever, because of everything that happened. Great plays, great moments, great home, you know, everything. Foster throwing out Doyle at the plate, Dwight Evans making a miracle catch in right field. Yeah. The home run by Fisk, the home run by Bernie Carvel. So much stuff happened in that game. And my wife asked me about the game. And I said, well, I said, you know, it's funny. I said, I was watching. The game ended at like 1 o'clock in the morning. And I'm watching the game, and of course, all these twists and turns. And Carbo hits the 3-run homer, and they tie it. And then George Foster throws out Doyle at home plate. You're like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, it was remarkable. But when Fisk hit the home run, the den, which used to be the bedroom that Kevin and I were in, and then my dad built rooms upstairs, one for each of us, is right next to my parents' bedroom.
Uh-oh.
And when Fisk hit the home run, I went, yeah! Right? And my father comes, oh, like, why? What's wrong? I'm like, Dad, I'm sorry, the Red Sox won. He goes, oh, geez, okay. All right. Okay, sorry, Dad. Yeah. He goes, what, 17 at the time? But, yeah. So. Oh, my goodness. Oh, well. That was... Long time ago. You sure, Minshew, and except for the mustache, he kind of reminds me of Peyton Manning. No?
No, not the right stature or facial hair.
Okay, just checking, because, I mean, you and Mike from Nori made him sound like he was from Peyton Manning yesterday. Everybody's great. He's fine. He's like, okay, guys. Okay. He's better than Brock Purdy. I give him credit for that. Although Purdy still didn't throw an interception yet. That'll change. But
and then we'll see how he responds. But I do think he will respond well based on how I've just seen him conduct himself and carry himself, play through an injury on a short week and play the way he did. I think he's a guy that can definitely ball and handle adversity, but we still have to see it.
I mean, do you know he actually leads all rookie quarterbacks in touchdown passes? That's the darndest thing.
No, that's amazing. And that's also a little bit of an indictment on the rest of the rookie quarterbacks, including one Kenny Pickett. But
exactly. No, you're exactly right. That is an indictment on everybody else. Like, yikes. Yeah, close games this weekend all over the place. The call at the end of the Giants Commanders game in the end zone. What the heck are they watching on that play?
Not only that, did you see the old exchange between the side judge and Terry McLaurin checking himself at the line of scrimmage, and then he threw the flag, which negated the play anyway? I mean...
Yeah, but what happened was when the other receiver moved over and lined up with McLaurin, McLaurin has to go up to the line of scrimmage. See, watch the play. There's a receiver that ends up in the slot, and he's even with McLaurin. It's the right call. See, that's the issue. The issue is when the other receiver moves over and ends up in the slot. Like, how come they're lined up exactly the same here? Right? Because he's off the ball. See, that to me is the key to the whole thing. Like, oh, yeah, no wonder they called it. But the call in the end zone is horrible.
Oh, yeah, that was, yeah.
The call in the end zone is a horrible call.
Oh, it's egregious. Absolutely.
I mean, see, that's the difference between you and me. I can look at it like my team and go, yeah, it's a bad call. You're like, oh, they deserved it. I hate them. All right, good.
No, that was egregious. That was something that they need to look at.
Bad call.
Yeah,
a bad call. Bad call. But no, well, that's the story on that. So let's get to letter of intent day coming up tomorrow. I've got to be in the building. I think at 6:30 tomorrow morning because I'm going to MC the event. But. Have I talked to James Franklin about dates on the letter of intent? Yes, I have. So it's not like I've never talked to him. But what I'm about to say is not me echoing anything he has said to me. This is just my personal opinion. So there's nothing. Don't think that. Well, James is saying, and so Steve's saying, no, don't do that. Okay, don't do that. That's not, that's not the case here. This is just me and my opinion. Because I have talked about an early signing period. We're coming up on 12 years of this show. And I think I've talked about it at least the first, was this the year five? So the first 7 years in the show, I mentioned they need an early signing period. Now, part of my background, of course, is college basketball. And college basketball may have its ups and downs. Not like anything has some flaws along the way. Okay, it's fine. But for the most part, college basketball gets a lot right. And, the tournament is right. Postseason tournaments are right. They work hard to give some excitement and relevance to the regular season, with all the different matchups they have, like Indiana's playing at Kansas and things like that. Okay, they're trying, but, they don't quite have the same traction in the regular season college football does, obviously. But when it comes to the postseason play, the tournament's right, the postseason conference tournaments are right, and what they do with the recruiting part of it is right. They've had an early signing period exponentially longer than college football has. And when do they have their early signing period? It's right at the beginning of the season. Now, this year, the beginning of the season was November 7th. The signing day this year was November 9th. Okay? But they've never had an issue with it. Now, is it going to be perfect? It won't be perfect, and I'll give you an example where it didn't turn out to be perfect. A long time ago, there was a kid out of Massachusetts by the name of Spike Albrecht, and he went to Michigan. In fact, against Louisville in the national championship game, which Louisville won, Albrecht had 17 first-half points. So that was Spike's big moment in his career. Well, he had some injuries along the way, and he finally gets to what he thinks is his last season. Well, he gets into his last season, and in the eighth game of the season, he hurts his hip, and he's out for the rest of the year. But he can't return to Michigan on a medical redshirt. The reason is that in the early signing period that took place 5-6 weeks earlier, they'd given his scholarship away. Well, why'd they give his scholarship away? Because he was a senior, and he's playing, and it was unforeseen that he would get a season-ending injury. It's just the circumstance of it. So Spike ended up transferring as a grad transfer to Purdue to finish out his career. So, okay, has something like that ever happened? Sure. But it's been rare that you've heard those stories. College football finally gets an early signing period, which I'm for. Now you always have to wonder, what are the unintended consequences? And to me, the unintended consequences is you've got coaches running all over the country during the course of from Thanksgiving weekend till now. You're trying to recruit. You're trying to check out the transfer portal. You're trying to coach a team to get ready for a bowl game. I mean, look at tomorrow, for example. There's a bowl game tomorrow on signing day. I mean, those coaches have to sign guys too, There's a bowl game on signing day tomorrow. I've always felt that there are certain guys that just, no matter what, they're going to sign with your team. They want to be with your program. They want to be with your fan base. And I always felt like the last weekend of July or the first weekend of August is when they should do signing day. And then have a late signing period the first Wednesday in February. Because that's what college basketball essentially does. The early signing period is right at the beginning of the season. Late signing period takes place in April. I mean, that's how I think it should be done. I think college basketball gives a good model for it. There have been very few issues with it. Penn State, for example, signed three terrific players in the early signing period, including Kerry Booth. Right? Now they're on to now working on November 23, November 24 and November 25. They're under working on that. To me, you can then spend your season recruiting-wise worrying about, okay, what do we need in the late signing period? Okay, and you hit December, okay, what's in the transfer portal? And then you get to the late signing period, you can finish up. Okay. And, I mean, you have coaches being fired earlier because of this. I mean, remember, when was James Franklin hired? He was hired in January. There was no early signing period. There was no early signing period when James Franklin, and he signed in January. Okay. And so there's no early signing period. Now you have to have your coach in place by championship weekend for the conference championship games because you have no shot at recruiting. Right? That's just my thought. I mean, and tomorrow, I look, and tomorrow's a day I enjoy. I think it's fun. I love the way Penn State does it. You know, they turn it into an event because for the players that sign tomorrow, it's one of the more important decisions of their life. They are now going to make the next step. They're going to play Penn State football, right? And if it goes really well, maybe they've got a shot at the NFL, okay? And then you are involved in the vast network of Penn State football players that can help you in a lifetime. And you can get your Penn State degree and the power and value of a Penn State degree and the vast network that can help you out with that Penn State degree as time goes because of all the living alumni in this country. So that's why tomorrow it's a life-defining moment for a lot of these young people. And one of the more important decisions of their life. It's a day that I have fun with. I know the way Joe used to do it. It was kind of like, okay, here's a sheet of paper. Here are the guys. And literally, I would have Joe. I would interview Joe every year on Letterman that day. Always did a one-on-one with him. The first question I always asked, I hand you a piece of paper with the names on it. Based on names and positional balance, how do you feel that you initially have done with this? Very general, wide open, let him answer it the way he wants to. Now, no offense. You know how much I love Joe.
This is kind of more fun.
I have a lot of fun with doing this. You know, the way they do it, it feels like the NFL draft. They got the music, the whole thing. I introduce who's going to make the next pick. All right, there is a quarterback in this segment. I can tell you right now, I've already seen how, because I was standing right there when they did it, I can tell you how it's going to be. How the selection's going to be announced. It's going to be kind of cool when that happens. Really cool. You'll get a kick out of it. And they did. I'll tell you this. They did it in one take. I was impressed. Okay. We'll come back with more in a moment. Great to have you with us today. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
Hey, can I make one quick point about Gardner Minshew for a moment? and that is this. It's a very emotional time for Gardner Minshew, which I'm not so sure about you, like, has put two and two together on this. But, you know, he went to East Carolina, the whole thing. He was going to be a grad assistant at Alabama. And then he got one more shot at Washington State where everything fell into place for him, and that's how he got to the NFL. Who was his coach at Washington State? Mike Leach.
Yep. Down there eulogizing him today, was excused from Eagles practice.
I mean, it was, you know, just remember, I mean, he could, and to be honest with you, he could go out and play the game of his life if Hurts can't go. Minshew could go out and play the game of his life this weekend because of this. But he's in the NFL because of Mike Leach. Simple as that. He was not going to be in the NFL based on what he did at East Carolina. And he's just going to, he was going to be a grad assistant at Alabama. He wasn't going to play. He was going to be a grad assistant. And Leach gave him one more shot up there. And Minshew at Washington State that year was phenomenal. Phenomenal. And that got him to the NFL. So obviously it's been a very tough time for him to go through. And sometimes guys can take those tough times and they can channel it into great performances. And Mike and Nori and Matt in Sealands Grove believe he is this close to being Peyton Manning.
Ha ha ha.